Hear ye, hear ye, hear ye. The Honorable Supreme Court of Ohio is now open session pursuant to adjournment.
Good morning. You may be seated. First case on our calendar is 05-2311 and 06-1686, Bedford Board of Education versus the Kiowa County Board of Revision. Mr. Sleggs.
Thank you. Mr. Chief Justice, may it please the court, my name is Todd Sleggs and I represent the appellant First Interstate Hawthorne Limited Partnership. I'd like to reserve 2 minutes of my time for rebuttal.
Watch your time there.
Thank you. These appeals come to the court from the Ohio Board of Tax Appeals. They involve two tax years, the tax year 2002 and 2003. They are appeals from Cuyahoga County Board of Revision decisions to the Ohio Board of Tax Appeals, wherein the Board of Revision reduced the county auditor's assessment from a fair market value of $3 million in 2002 to $1,500,000. And in 2003, the Board of Revision found the same value, $1.5 million, reducing the auditor's value from $3,600,000, which was an update of the 2002 value. We appealed this case and these two appeals to this court because the Board of Tax Appeals reinstated the county auditor's assessment, and we feel that that decision by the Board of Tax Appeals for both tax years is unreasonable and unlawful. The reason that we feel it is unreasonable is the Board of Tax Appeals decision in both cases is internally inconsistent. The appellee, who was the appellant before the Board of Tax Appeals, submitted the testimony of an appraiser who did not value the property but criticized the methodology that was used by the county auditor and the taxpayer in valuing the property. Their argument was that you had to value the inline space that's before this court as part of a larger shopping center. However, they did not submit any valuation evidence using that methodology. Now, the Board of Tax Appeals in their decision agreed with the appellee that the property should be valued as part of a larger property, but they reinstated the county auditor's assessment, which was clearly based upon a valuation of just the inline space that comprises this parcel. And what is frustrating to the appellant in this case, and we mentioned it in our briefs, is whether you value this entire shopping center or you just value this parcel, a value must be assigned to this parcel. Now, we were required by the Board of Tax Appeals in an August 20th, 2004 order to provide the appellee and their appraiser with the financial information for the entire 317,000 square foot shopping center. So they clearly had the information they needed to submit evidence valuing the whole and then coming up with some methodology to value just the parcel. But our position is that when the Board of Tax Appeals said, okay, we agree with the appellee, that's the appropriate methodology, it was incumbent on them as the appellant before the Board of Tax Appeals to do the second part of their case, which was to submit valuation evidence using that overall methodology and then arriving at a value for this individual parcel.
Could they not just rely on what the auditor had determined as part of what was in the record?
No, Your Honor, because the record is clear, and we cite to the record card and also the printout, because during the two tax years that we're dealing with, Cuyahoga County was moving from a printed record card to a computer-generated printout record card. It's clear from the calculations and the auditor's record card that they are just valuing the 50,000 square feet of inline space. So there is no evidence of in the record in this case of an overall value for the shopping center and then chopping that value up into a value for just this parcel. And that's why we feel that the Board of Tax Appeals decision is internally inconsistent, because the appellee did not come forward with valuation evidence using their methodology. I mean, they only went halfway. They said, we think this is the methodology that should have been used, but we didn't use it. I mean, their appraiser didn't testify to a value for the
counsel,
property.
What did how did the appellant establish their figure? I think there were about four different scenarios
proposed,
Your Honor.
Right? Yes. If you look at the county auditor's record card, they relied primarily on the income approach. They did do a cost approach, but this property was constructed in 1991. Our valuation dates were 2000 and 2003. So the auditor, in their final determination of value, kind of discounts the cost approach. But they lay out their net operating income, their expense percentages, the vacancy percentages, and the capitalization rates that they're using. Our case before the Board of Revision was to come in with the actual information. Our net operating income was less than half of what the county auditor was projecting. Our vacancy during the time period at issue in the case was anywhere from 50% to 80% versus the 7% that the auditor used.
So basically, you're not, even though it's not the methodology you used or the perspective, but valuing the entirety is not, you're not opposed to that.
I'm not, well, it's interesting. I got into this in cross-examination of the appellee's appraiser at the Board of Tax Appeals. You know, when he was talking about highest and best use and economic unit, I took him through a hypothetical with a 50-acre parcel, and would it be worth more if you broke the parcel up into 10 5-acre parcels? The reason why I did that was to point out the fact that they did not submit any data that valuing this as a 317,000 square foot shopping center or part of a 317,000 square foot shopping center would result in a higher value. And I cited the court to the definition of highest and best use, and there are four elements. And the fourth one is that the highest and best use that you espouse is maximally productive. That is, results in the highest value for the property. So I am.
Doesn't that support your valuation, your calculations, that you're getting that you have the highest and best use, and obviously the entirety would be theoretically a fully occupied functional shopping district?
Well, in this particular case, and I believe Ms. Liberatore touched on this in her testimony before the Board of Revision, the next anchor space next to the inline space was the Kmart, which was vacant, which was 90,000 square feet. So I think based upon the record in this case, if you add in that additional vacancy, I'm not sure you come to a higher value. You might come to a lower value. And that was really our point before the Board of Tax Appeals, is that if they were going to come in and espouse an alternative methodology, they needed market data to show that it's going to meet that maximally productive criteria and highest and best use, and they didn't do that. That's why I took Mr. Nash through that exercise where you go to the market and you say, what sells for more per square foot, a 317,000 square foot shopping center or a 50,000 square foot shopping center? We believe, based upon the facts in this case, that looking solely at the inline space results in the highest value because we had significant vacancy in the anchor space. So we'd be adding more non-revenue producing space into the analysis. Some of the anchors were occupied and some of them weren't.
Mr. Sleggs, your expert didn't testify at the Board of Tax Appeals.
In the 2003 tax year appeal, we did have a real estate appraiser testify to rebut Mr. Nash's opinion of how the property should be valued. We did not support.
What was before the board with respect to the valuation of the inline strip center?
The evidence in both the 2003 and 2002 tax year appeals was the same. I mean, we submitted the financial history, the vacancy information, and we submitted a number of capitalization rate scenarios. The county was using a somewhat lower capitalization
rate. But no expert testimony.
That's correct, Your Honor.
Was the auditor's evaluation before it as well?
Yes.
Counselor, now I believe you alleged that the county auditor also served as a member of the Board of Revision.
That's correct.
I found a letter that he signed as secretary, but did he in fact, was he one of the voting members?
In Cuyahoga County, they have designated representatives that sit on the Board of Revision. But in both instances, if you look at the journal entry of the Board of Revision, which is included in the supplement for both the appeals, they signed as agreeing to reduce the assessment.
And so the county auditor himself agreed, after hearing the evidence that your client presented, to reduce the value.
That's correct.
And yet the Board of Tax Appeals ignored his own agreement that the value should be reduced and went back to his first assessment, which was again on an individual piece, despite the Board of Tax Appeals saying you had to value the whole piece.
Yes, Your Honor. And Mr. Dunlap at the Board of Tax Appeals in his dissent picks up on that exact point. And we did touch on it in our brief that when you have a situation where the county auditor votes against his own initial assessment, that that's strong evidence that that there was something wrong with that initial assessment. And so we feel that that's another reason why the Board of Tax Appeals decision and order in this case is unreasonable.
There was some argument that the county auditor had looked at a higher occupancy rate than your figure showed, and that might have influenced him. Can you speak to that point?
Yes, Your Honor. If you look in the supplement under the county auditor's calculations in the record card, whether you're looking at 2002 or 2003, they used a 5% vacancy factor, which was significantly lower than what the actual vacancy factor was at the property. And that's the reason why there's such a big disparity between what the auditor's projection of net operating income was and what the actual was for the property. And so we feel that the evidence that we submitted to the Board of Revision showed that the auditor's initial valuation was incorrect. And as you note, the auditor did vote to change the value. And so when you look at the fact that the net operating income was significantly less than the auditor's initial projection, I think it's clear that there was a basis in the record in this case for the Board of Revision's determination to reduce the assessment to $1,500,000.
Counsel, the Board of Tax Appeals opinion seems to criticize the Board of Revision for not laying out exactly how they arrived at their value. Is that required by the Board of Revision or by our opinions?
No, Your Honor. The decisions that I've read of this court have required that there be evidence in the record to support the Board of Revision's determination of value. And the statute, which is Chapter 5715, just requires that the Board of Revision keep minutes of the proceeding.
Now, the Board of Tax Appeals seems to be mystified as to how they arrived at their value, but correct me if I'm misreading the record. The auditors' assumptions were based on historical income and occupancy of this center. Subsequent to that, another mall goes up nearby that's draining off customers and causing the mall to lose tenants. And the testimony at the Board of Revision was that the income was about half of what the auditor's assumption was. And the occupancy rate, instead of being 95% or whatever the auditor assumed, was 45%, roughly half of what the assumption was. And the Board of Revision cut the assessment in half. Am I wrong in that conclusion? That
no,
they,
you're correct,
that,
Your
that
Honor.
They looked, you could look at this record and say they looked at the facts and found the facts to be that the income was about half of what the auditor's assumption was. The occupancy is 50% or 45% occupancy instead of 95%, and therefore cut the assessment in half.
Yes, Your Honor, and Ms. Liebertor did testify to the specific fact that you mentioned that there were other additional shopping centers off of Route 82 that had opened up subsequent to the development of this site that resulted in the increase in the vacancy that the property was experiencing. But I think your point really touches on the second argument that we make in our brief, and that is that the Board of Tax Appeals did not follow the statute in terms of making an independent determination of value. I cite a number of Board of Tax Appeals decision and orders in our brief because it is our opinion that the Board of Tax Appeals in these appeals and the appeals that I cite is starting to act as a court of appeals and not a de novo finder of fact under the cases that this court has decided, Black, Park Ridge, et cetera. And I think Justice Pfeiffer, that when you talk about the Board of Tax Appeals finding fault with the BOR decision, that is one of the things that we're seeing in the, that they find fault with the BOR decision, is that they're starting to look at the record before the Board of Revision as if they were a court of appeals. And we feel that that is inconsistent with the statute, it's inconsistent with the case law from this court, and it's another reason why the Board of Tax Appeals decision in order in these appeals is unreasonable and unlawful. For these reasons, we would request that the court reverse the decision and orders of the Board of Tax Appeals in this case and remand the case with instructions to reinstate the Board of Revision's value, because the evidence of in the record supporting the Board of Revision's value has not been rebutted by the appellees in this case. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Slags. Mr. Kunzer.
Mr. Chief Justice, may it please the court, I am Thomas A. Kunzer, co-counsel for the Bedford Board of Education. Your Honors, the issue in this case is the proper role or functioning of the Board of Tax Appeals when someone seeks to challenge the auditor's value, whether that be the property owner or a taxing entity, and fails to present any credible evidence in the Board of Revision or in the Board of Tax Appeals showing that the auditor erred in determining its value.
Oh, no, wait a minute. In the Board of Tax Appeals lays out, you're the appellant in the Board of Tax Appeals, the burden's on you.
The burden is on the appellant to show that the Board of Revision committed an error. The burden should not necessarily be to establish a new value.
And what was the error that you presented?
The Board of Revision changed the auditor's value without any credible evidence to support that change.
Well, there was evidence of income, half of what the auditor's evaluation was based on the income approach, correct?
Yes, that was
right.
One of them.
And there was evidence presented at the Board of Revision that the actual income was about half of what the auditor's assumption was, and that the occupancy rate was a horrible occupancy rate for this kind of a facility compared to the auditor's assumption. What's not credible about that?
In two respects, Your Honor. First, the center needed to be valued as a single economic unit. Both appraisers, both the Board of Education's appraisers and the property owner's appraiser testified that the market would never look at these inline stores with parking space over here not servicing the inline stores and create a value to that. So you had to look at the entire center. And the property owner never presented any evidence as to the entire center's value. This is what the auditor looked at when he presented the value, because he's statutorily mandated to value all the property in the county, and then he just allocated values to the various permanent parcel numbers.
But you have the burden of proof, and your appraiser didn't present any evidence of value.
That is correct, because the parcel brought before the review boards by the property owner could not be valued in isolation from the other property.
Okay. I saw somewhere, I don't know where, that someone was critical of the cap rate, the assumption that the property owner used. Is that correct?
We did not criticize the cap rate that the property owner used. We just believe that the auditor's values and cap rates and information was correct. And that was the second problem with what the property owner presented at the Board of Revision. The property owner presented only what they categorized as actual income and expense figures and actual vacancy records. But when you do an income approach to value of property, you have to look at the market, not just the actual, because poor income and expense figures and poor vacancy figures on a piece of property can be attributable not to the value of the property, but to poor management, poor marketing of the center.
Could be attributed to long-term contracts that you can't get out of.
Well, then you'd be getting the income if If that was the case, you wouldn't be having vacancies without income.
Well, but you're saying on the income approach, you're supposed to use a market approach to income instead of the actual income. How does that make sense?
Well, this court has in the past held that market information is what is needed to value property, and that's what the Real Estate Appraisal Institute holds. You don't, when you try to value the property as of a specific tax lien date, you don't take it burdened with perhaps below market leases. You can look at those and have that impact your ultimate value, but you have to also look at what that property could generate as income on the current market.
The mall's
levels.
Empty.
That's because it was poorly marketed. It's in a good location. It's next to an interstate exchange, an exit. It's next to a developing area.
So is Northland Mall.
That's correct.
It's defunct. Is that a poor marketing strategy, or is that changing demographics and other malls being put up?
It could be either, Your Honor. It could be either, or a function of both. I mean, we have malls in the Cleveland area that are now changing their structure from covered malls to village-type retail outlets. But you need to adopt changing market conditions. But merely because you have a vacancy doesn't mean the property has declined in value.
Why shouldn't we look at the fact that the auditor was part of the Board of Revision and agreed to the reduction based on evidence that he saw? Why should we give that any weight?
I don't think you should, Your Honor, because particularly in Cuyahoga County, it was not particularly the auditor there, it was his representative. And there is
Doesn't the representative not speak for the auditor? I mean, the auditor has a seat at the table. He sends a duly authorized deputy, and that deputy votes. Doesn't that bind the auditor?
No, Your Honor. The representative is speaking on behalf of the auditor in that function. But the function of the Board of Revision is to review what the auditor did and change that value only if there's evidence presented to it that justifies that change. If the auditor would, sitting at the Board of Revision, just decide, well, today I feel like a different value. There's been no evidence presented, but I'll agree to a different value today. No one's presented any evidence at the Board of Revision. The Board of Tax Appeals could not affirm that decision under this court's rulings.
That's your hypothetical. Here there was plenty of evidence. All of the rents, all the occupancy rate, and you say that's just not credible.
I would respectfully disagree with you, Your Honor. That it's not credible because it did not value the entire center as a single unit, and it did not present any market information to the Board of Revision on which to base.
Well, Counsel, is it credible or relevant? I mean, you don't have any quibble or with the numbers that were presented. You just think that's irrelevant to the way this unit should be valued. It should be valued in its entirety, just a different methodology.
That is correct. It needs additional information, and I don't have any quibble with they're saying these were the actual figures.
Did your client challenge the entire parcel or just this strip mall center?
Our client filed a counter-complaint. We cannot, when we enter a counter-complaint, we cannot add additional property to it. When the initial complaint is filed, it's filed by the property owner. He specifies what property he's bringing before the Board of Revision. We can file a counter-complaint to participate in that hearing, but we can't draw new property in. So we could not bring the entire center in. So we could only address this particular.
The only challenge here is to the limited parcel, which is part of the larger center.
That is correct.
Your view says, how do we determine when we should look at a larger parcel or when we should look at the individual parcel that's before the board on a complaint for revision?
Well, when the economics and the nature of the property is such that you can't value that property in isolation from the larger parcel of which it is. And both the property owner's appraiser and our appraiser testified to that to the board in the Board of Tax Appeals.
Are you saying basically that your appraiser could not assign a separate value?
Well, he said, no, he could assign a separate value. He said, theoretically, anything can be valued. It depends
how
on
does
how,
the, how does the auditor, isn't the auditor obligated to assign separate values to each property piece?
The auditor is obligated to assign a value to each parcel, and as this court defined in Park Ridge Investment case. The parcel is not necessarily the same as the permanent parcel lines that are drawn by an auditor.
And why couldn't your appraiser have said, this is what the whole is rated, and this is the portion I allocate to this center? I mean, wouldn't that have been your burden of proof to say, the Board of Vision is wrong because you should evaluate it as a whole and assign this amount to the center?
If the whole parcel had been brought before the Board of Vision, yes. But the initial burden is on the property owner who seeks to reduce the value.
And he achieved that burden. He got a different value. Now the burden's on your client to challenge it. And you're saying we can't challenge it because we don't have the whole piece before us?
What I'm saying is initially the property owner did not meet its burden because it took this isolated parcel and tried to value it in isolation from the center. And that was improper, so that the evidence presented could not support a change in value.
And so your appraiser took the whole center and evaluated it, but refused to give an assignment to the piece of property that was in dispute.
No, our appraiser did not value the whole center because the whole center was not before the proceeding. So we did not want to burden the Board of Education with the expense of having an appraisal done of property that was not before.
So he just said, he didn't value anything, he just said it's the wrong approach.
That is correct. And it's the same thing the property owner's appraiser said.
But the auditor valued it, didn't he?
Pardon?
The auditor valued this strip center.
That is correct.
So there is that valuation there.
There's
and the owner's expert valued it based on the income approach, as Justice Pfeiffer's pointed out.
No, Your Honor, the owner's expert, Mr. Provencher, did not value it. He testified that he never arrived at a value. At the Board of Revision, the property owner submitted what they called an owner's opinion of value, which wasn't signed by the owner, and supposedly it was the owner's opinion of what the property was worth.
It was presented by a third-party appraiser presented by the property owner.
No, that was a representative of the property. It wasn't an appraiser. It wasn't a licensed appraiser.
But wasn't that the valuation at $1.5 million?
That was at, yes.
So at least two valuations for this specific parcel have been entered in the record here.
The property owner's opinion of what it's worth. The county auditor, though, it's our position, the county auditor, and there was no evidence that the county auditor valued this parcel in isolation from the remainder of the center.
Is there any evidence as to exactly how the auditor came to their valuation to begin with here?
No, Your Honor.
Okay, so isn't that part of the problem? When the valuation methodology is being criticized and the very basis of the valuation is an unknown?
And that's one of the reasons I submit that the property owner did not meet its burden of establishing that the auditor did do something wrong. Because the auditor is statutorily mandated to value all the property in the county.
But, sure, that's obviously their job. But here, there was no explanation, no methodology, the cards or the printout or whatever didn't give the information. So the taxpayer used a methodology, presented it to the Board of Revision, and the Board of Revision took that as being relevant, credible evidence and reduced it. But you're saying that there should have been a burden on the taxpayer to show the auditor's mistake when there's no evidence there that the auditor put forth to show how they value the property.
Well, the auditor did put forth information in the property card showing the income and expenses that it looked at in arriving at its value. So there was information as to how the auditor allocated value to that parcel. It is our position that the auditor looked at the entire center.
But there's no evidence of that.
Right.
There's no evidence that the auditor, there is evidence the auditor made certain assumptions as to income and occupancy, but there is no evidence in the record on the auditor's card that the auditor valued this strip part of the mall as a part of a larger package or valued it separately.
Not specifically, other than references in the card that there are other parts of the mall.
But there's no evidence that the auditor used the approach that you say the auditor had to use?
No, but since it is the proper approach, I would assume that the auditor properly fulfilled his duties. And there's no evidence that he did not properly fulfill his duties. It is our position, Your Honors, that when the property owner seeks a reduction in value, he needs to establish evidence to show he's entitled to that reduction. And in this case, because he failed to present evidence as to value of the entire neighborhood shopping center and did not present any market information, which is an essential element of the income and expense approach to valuation.
Is Simmons versus the Cuyahoga County Board of Revision...
Excuse me, Your Honor.
Is Simmons versus the Cuyahoga County Board of Revision your strongest case for that point?
I think that is a very strong case for the point, but there are other cases. There's a Salem Medical Arts and Development where where this court stated in its opinion that the BOR and BTA acted, that the challenge was that the BOR and BTA acted unreasonably by adopting the auditor's valuation. And this court in its opinion said, in the absence of probative evidence of a lower value, however, the BOR and the BTA are justified in fixing the value at the amount assessed by the county auditor. Thank you, Your Honors.
Thank you, Mr. Conzer. Mr. Slags, you've used your time, but you may take 30 seconds.
Thank you, Your Honor. There is evidence in the record of the county auditor's calculations. I would direct the court to the supplement in the 2002 case at 20 through 24, 50 through 55, and in the 2003 case beginning at page 22. The calculations are very clear. The auditor valued only the in-line space. Our information dovetails with that information and shows that the auditor's values were in error. Appley has admitted they have no quibble with the financial information. Their appraiser never criticized the financial information. Nobody has questioned the evidence or rebutted the evidence in this case. Sims is not directly on point, in my opinion, because in that case, the issue was whether the Board of Revision had to come forward with evidence to support their value. I think this court's decision in the Lakota case that's cited in the briefs, and also more recently, the Dayton-Montgomery County Board of Revision case, support the idea that the appellant before the Board of Tax Appeals must come forward with evidence to rebut the problems that they have with a Board of Revision decision, and that simply wasn't done in this case. And we would respectfully request that the court reverse and remand the case to the Board of Tax Appeals.
Thank you, Mr. Slags. The case is submitted. You will be advised of our opinion.